Good morning and welcome to all as we have now gathered together for the offering of the Sunday Mass. A special welcome to Joe McAuliffe of St. Michael Catholic Radio is going to share a few words with us here after the homily about the good work being done by this apostolate here in the Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma. And also for all of our guests who might be refugees from your home parish because of the marathon this morning. If you're not able to get to Christ the King or Holy Family, welcome today. You're always welcome, not just on the Marathon Sunday. Your presence here is a blessing, all of our guests, as we've now gathered here, all of us together for this Mass. My thanks to the hospitality shown to me this last week when I visited both Holy Family Cathedral School as well as Bishop Kelly High School to see the students and faculty there that are members of our parish. Some of the things I learned is that at Holy Family, amongst the middle school girls, Emily Bronte is a favored author. So good. So reading some good literature there. And also learned some things about math over at Bishop Kelly. One of the students said that math is the favorite subject because there's almost always just a single answer. And so you look, but I said that's good. It gets a search for the truth. That's why we had mathematicians at one time who are also philosophers and theologians that search for the truth. And also thanks to everybody that came out on Friday for the trivia night. To benefit the Clancy family. We had a great time. Lots of people were there to support our friends. For our guests, the Clancy's longtime members of our parish, they lost their home in a fire and an explosion recently. So some of the teams that we had that really got into it, they all had our names that were there. And I will say, the Saints did beat the Sinners. Because we had one team, their name was the Sinners, another team, the name were the Saints. I was one of the Saints. I was on that team. But the Cowboys won. By the way, so congratulations to them. We had a great time. And please know for all of our guests, you're welcome to the bake sale in the parish hall right after this Mass. And please know that this week, Thanksgiving Day weekend, while the parish office will be closed on Thursday and Friday, we will maintain our regular daily Mass schedule. So you're welcome to come on Thanksgiving Day at 8 a.m. and begin your Thanksgiving Day with offering thanks to God in the Mass, and also have Mass the next day, and also our Holy Hour on Friday evening. All that will remain the same. One of my favorite movies is the movie Beckett. It was released in 1964, starred the late Richard Burton and the late Peter O'Toole. And it's a dramatization of the story of St. Thomas Becket, who's the Archbishop of Canterbury in 12th century England. And it's about his friendship with King Henry II, who is his close friend and confidant, but how this friendship turns into conflict. See, what the king is trying to do, he tries to bring the church under his control by appointing Becket, his best friend, and pulling the right strings to make him the Archbishop of Canterbury, the head bishop in England. And it backfires when Becket has a conversion experience. He'd been kind of nominally in his faith, but now takes it seriously, and he decides he's going to be more faithful to God than he will be to his king and his friend. And thus, there begins the conflict. There's an important scene in the film. And also, you've got to remember that Becket would have been seen, as we might use the phrase today, a one percenter. He's one of the wealthiest men in the kingdom. And on the day before he should be made the archbishop, he gives away everything he owns. Every possession he gives away to the poor. Now, some see that as a cynical move in order to gain popularity amongst the poor. And when he's challenged about that, Becket's response is interesting. He says, he no longer sees God as sad and distant. He now has a new understanding. It's a God of joy, a God of love. And that is, this new understanding has led to an unexpected freedom and a happiness he's not known before. It also leads him into the conflict that will end in Becket's martyrdom. In these final days of the liturgical year, we continue to pray for the dead, especially the names that are displayed here in the sanctuary of the church, the members of our parish or their immediate families. We're reminded also of our own mortality, and we're challenged by those last things of death and judgment, heaven and hell. We're challenged to see today in the book of Proverbs the gift of sacrificial love in the midst of the family, how that is priceless. We're challenged by St. Paul that we are to stay sober and alert. We're children of the light and of the day, that the day of the Lord will not overtake us like a thief in the night. And how we understand our experience of God will guide us in how we react to these challenges, to these last things of our mortality, of living as children of the light and of the day, and how we understand our discipleship as the church, individually and collectively. And one of those challenges that we're faced today is from today's gospel about the parable of the talents in Matthew. We're challenged to be, what is going to be our response in how God has given these wonderful gifts to us? We're challenged by what our responsibility, what our accountability should be. Now, a little bit of backstory about what a talent is in the time of Jesus. It's a unit of measure of weight, usually of silver, around 70 plus pounds. That's a lot of silver. Think about it. Was it that guy, the former actor, I see his commercials repeatedly about invest in silver and gold. They never go down in price and so on. Well, this guy would really have a field day with a single talent. Because the value of a talent in the time of Jesus, 5 talents, by one estimation, would have been worth about 15 years of income. So we're talking some real serious money, some serious 1%er type money. And even a single talent, you know, that's not pocket change. Now, as with so many of the parables of Jesus, he uses examples that are somewhat over-the-top exaggerations to make the point. And unlike many of the other parables, that unless you're up on your first century Palestinian agricultural practices about sowing seeds and figs, trees, and so on, I think the parable of the 5 talents is a bit different, because I think a lot of us, given the demographics of our parish, we can understand about investing. We can understand about mutual funds, 401ks, and so on, about investing, buying, selling, and trading, and such. Because the master in this parable, he entrusts his servants with a vast amount of wealth distributed to each according to their ability. And the first two, they literally double the wealth. They've invested this great gift. They have risked it by using it, and therefore they have increased it. And the master responds by saying that you've done a great job, so I'm going to give you more responsibility. Now, there's a joke amongst the clergy, not just the Catholic ones, but the Protestants as well. The reward for doing good work is being given more work to do. But I think there's more to this. Because what does also the master say? Come, share my joy. Share in the joy of the master. I think that's the true reason why they're entrusted with this vast wealth in the first place. To see it not as a task, not as just a responsibility, and certainly not as a burden, but rather to see it as an invitation. Share in my joy with the gift I've given you by increasing it. Because the third servant, he takes that gift, this vast amount, and he buries it for safekeeping. Now, let's give him a little bit of credit. He didn't go over to 81st and Riverside and blow it at the casino. So let's give him a little bit of credit. You know, but he does keep it for safekeeping, but he just simply buries it, didn't do anything with it. And he tells the reason why for his inactivity, because he says, the master's a hard man, and he fears him. And he's labeled then the servant as being wicked, because he knows what his master wants him to do and he doesn't do it. He's labeled as lazy because it's easier for him to bury the gift rather than to put it to use and to risk it. He sees this, what he's been given, as a task, or perhaps even worse, a burden rather than a gift. And that's why he forfeits it. In this parable, I think we should clearly see that the master is God. The talents are not units of silver. Rather, they are the fullness of the revelation, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the most valuable gift that we are entrusted with. And we are the servants. We, the church, the body of Christ. And how we understand and experience God, how we understand ourselves as the church, how we understand the world, will affect how we use this gift. Will it lead us to use this gift to share in the Master's joy, to answer that invitation? For if God is understood or experienced as being sad or distant or hard, a God to be feared in a fearful, in the worst way, what are we going to do with that gift that's been entrusted to us? We're going to bury it. We're going to see it not as invitation, but as a burden. If we receive the sacraments, even with great frequency, but if we're living a lifestyle counter to the gospel, are we multiplying that gift, or are we digging a hole in which to bury it? And by lifestyle, let me be clear, I don't mean just simply, because we usually hear that maybe as a code word for some kind of sexual behavior. Let's expand that understanding a bit. Yes, include sexual behavior, but also should include hearts infected by hatred and fear, hearts that are infected with jealousy and envy, selfishness, those that are committing any kind of abuse, any form of manipulation, any form of dishonesty, including in business dealings. Parable challenges, if that's what we're doing, then we're not multiplying that gift, we're digging a hole in which to bury it. And you know that saying, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. And also, yes, our faith is personal, but it's not to be private. There's a lot of pressure on us in this culture that pretty much we're free to believe whatever we want as long as we keep it to ourselves. And if we're doing that, are we sharing that gift? Are we multiplying it, or are we digging a hole in which to bury the gift? You know, I read something recently. One of the biggest attractions to people of younger generation, we usually call the millennials, who are leaving organized religion in record numbers, not just the Catholic Church, but religion across the board. One of the things that attracts them to stay to be part of the life of the church is not what they hear from the pulpit, but rather what they experience in the lived witness of other disciples, their peers, their parents, their family members. Now, I say this not to get me off the hook, so I don't have to try to preach well, but rather to see the importance of sharing the gift of faith by risking it, by multiplying it, rather than digging the hole. We're to share this gift. Now, that doesn't mean that we all have to become street preachers. We all have to go over to 21st and Harvard, over by Quick Trip, stand up, and start telling everybody about Jesus. There's not enough room for all of us to fit around there at Quick Trip anyway. But it does mean that what we believe about God, about Jesus, about ourselves as the church, the one holy Catholic and apostolic church, should be seen as having an effect in our lives, in our daily decisions, and therefore how we share that belief. Because I think that this parable challenges us that faith does not survive in those who bury it. We have to risk sharing it. Because the church, the gift of faith, it's not a museum piece. Many of you know that I'm a big history geek. I love going to museums, love to see things preserved, under glass. The faith is not to be preserved in a museum, kept safely under glass, but to take it and to share it, to live it, to proclaim it. That's how it increases. And we're challenged to see that we have been entrusted with this incredible gift, the fullness of the revelation of God's love for us, that we've been invited to share in the joy that God has for us. The God who not only creates us, but also saves us through Jesus, but also desires that we share fully in that divine love, that divine mercy, that divine joy, who is Jesus. That's what St. Thomas Becket understood. That was the heart of his conversion. It's neither a sad nor an angry God that we come here today to offer our praise and our worship before in the offering of this Mass. But it's a God that's full of joy, full of love for us. And we're to experience that freedom, that happiness, as well as the courage and conviction to stand by this faith, to share that faith. And thus today we are challenged to experience, to embrace, and to live the gift, so that we too can fully share in the joy of the Master.